Okay, we'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council meeting of October 18th, 2022. Welcome. We'll begin with a thought or prayer and pledge of allegiance with Council Member Knowlton.
Thanks, Mayor. I'll share a short thought. I was looking up thoughts to share, and I came across this list called 10 Traits of an Effective Council Member from the MRSC.org website, which is a good one, by the way. And one of the items in that 10 is, quote, pitchforks and torches. A good council member emerges when she votes for something she knows is in the best interests of the city, while public outcry demands the opposite. Some of the most important decisions an elected official makes may be counter to a barrage of angry emails and public comment. And I thought, well, that deserves to be questioned. That advice actually deserves to be questioned. If we're elected officials, should we not be serving our public and what they want? And one of the points that is made here is, well, they may not necessarily reflect the majority. There's always that risk. But I was thinking that, well, what are cases or conditions that must be met where, as a council person, you felt like you can go against opinion? And I just categorized it in my head into three bins, and I thought it would be useful to just relay this. One is, if you feel like people are motivated by incorrect or incomplete information, or you feel like you're representing a long time frame, a time frame that may include, for example, future residents that, by the very fact that they're not here yet, cannot speak for themselves. And then the third category would be geography. You might be hearing even from residents across your entire city, but the decision that you're looking at may affect residents who matter, who have lives that just plain don't live in your city, and you actually have a regional impact. And it is important to consider the geographic impact that may simply be broader than your municipality. So for what that's worth, I was trying to unpack that kind of phrase, which we hear on occasion, and to try to put some structure around it. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please repeat with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ted. Our first item is citizen comment, and we invite anyone that would like to address the council to come forward, state your name and address, and make a comment. Seeing no one, we'll move on.
Can I make a comment just real quick, sir?
Oh, please, come forward.
I know we were watching on Zoom at home.
You're going to have to come to the mic because it's got to be recorded.
It's true.
I was just going to say we were watching it.
Name?
Oh, Brandy Sorry. Wendell. Okay. We were just watching it at home on Zoom, and it was hard to hear everybody. So I don't know if that can be changed or not.
Thank you. We've spent a lot of money trying to do that. So, yeah. Okay. Next item is, and I'm excited about this. This is Chief Black, and he's going to have some police recognition awards. And welcome to, I'm sure the police all came to intimidate our group in the work session. I noticed they left quickly.
They want new cars, Mayor. And they're all here to talk to you about that tonight. Just kidding. I would say that we don't usually do it this way, but that would be a little bit of a misleading. For the last few years, I have been very lax in doing this at all. And we have had a number of instances this year that have, I'm always impressed by the caliber of officers that serve this city. I appreciate them. I feel like it's just such a privilege to be a peer with them. and to have the honor of this specialized position within the department of being their chief. But I still look at these men and women and am in awe of how they do things and their patience. I think we've borne that out for years in our annual reports at the very few use of force reports that we even encounter, the very few citizen complaints that we encounter. We're not perfect and we're not without those incidences, but by and large, I'm very impressed with them. In the last month, there has been a couple of just really standout examples of this. And as I thought about how to recognize them, I started thinking a lot of the questions that you folks ask me about our officers and how we handle things. And I thought this would be an opportunity to present these men in this case with some recognition in front of you, the representatives of the citizens that they serve, and they have served with real honor here. Included in your packet, I think I sent this out, the policy that talks about our different levels of awards. And tonight, I would like to present two situations that both merited awards. The first one is a formal commendation that was of such impact to our community, I think, and to sending a message to our businesses, which is a lot of times they're not fully, I don't know if they feel fully represented because they don't vote. They oftentimes don't live in our city, but they're such a key part of our economy, our community. We really couldn't exist without them. And the care that these officers took in this particular case, to me, really stood out that they are willing to be caretakers of this vital part of our community at all hours of the night. In early September, we had a pretty substantial break-in vehicle burglary of some vehicles and down in our industrial area. And the officer who went and took the report a couple of days later was able to get some information about what the car may have looked like. And a lot of times those go out as attempt to locates or be on the lookouts. And just like the rest of the world, sometimes those things just drift to the back of our minds. We hear so many of them. But we had two officers on that night, Officer Steve Marble and Josh Ellery. And I'd like to invite them to come up and stand by me while I read this commendation that was originally written by their sergeant and then forwarded on to me. And I just added a couple of thoughts to this also. But I would like I'd like all of you to hear what this commendation is and what they did. On September 26th, they responded to the area of Redwood Road and Center Street. Officer Marble had located a suspect vehicle that had been involved in a theft just a few weeks earlier. And he located not only the vehicle, but the occupants. They had come back to re-victimize this burglary. He paid attention to that. When he arrived, he tactfully and legally and constitutionally questioned this reasonable suspicion, which led him to have the probable cause to detain detain the driver of that vehicle. Then Officer Ellery showed up, and they both began foot patrols in the area to try to locate someone else. They knew this had not been done alone. And Officer Ellery walked a number of these parking lots that night and found the second suspect. He did not know the police had contacted his partner at that time. He located him in the process of actually committing a vehicle burglary. They took the both of these suspects into custody through their skill and their interview skills, their personality, which means so much. A lot of times it's not bullying, it's personality. They obtained confessions from these suspects, and they arrested both of them for these crimes, which were deeply affected this business. Maybe we don't often think that a business gets affected through violent crime. But property crimes really do mean a lot. And I will tell you, I have listened to a number of our business owners over the last years tell me how much they appreciate the safety and the security and the attention that's paid to their businesses by all of our officers. This was just an outstanding example to me of not letting what may have been considered a routine theft report that had been taken, closed, a possible suspect description put out, but days, even I think it was about a week later, wasn't it, guys? Yeah. that they still were looking for this, and they still found it. This was just, to me, a small example, and their sergeant recommended to me, and I fully agree that they be formally commended, which is one of the award systems that we give in this department. So I'd like to issue them both a formal commendation tonight. Officer Josh Ellery, who's been with us about 10 years now?
A little over eight years.
Time flies with Josh. And Officer Steve Marble, who's been with us about 5.5, 6 years probably. Did I balance that out right?
Perfect.
See, he just knew to say it. This is perfect. So anyway, congratulations to both of these officers, and I'm privileged to be able to formally commend them for their work. Want the mayor in this? You ought to get the mayor in this.
Sure. No, you too.
Mayor, would you join us?
Hop on over.
You stick me in the middle?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're best looking. Why not?
Thanks. All right. I'd like to invite.
Should I stay close?
Yeah, do you want to stay close? Because this next one's pretty neat, too. Corporal Halls, one of our newly promoted corporals in this last year. We have another one I'll be introducing to you today, hope in a few weeks, along with, since COVID, we haven't done a really good job at formally introducing all of our new officers and swearing them in front of the council, and we do plan on doing that in a future meeting. But Corporal Halls.
We would love that.
Yeah, he's been with us, man, almost the whole time I've been here. And he's one of our great leaders here. Officer Boyle, Officer Bradley, Officer Lewis, Officer Hansen. I'm going to give you a little bit of a backstory. A side story on this that just came to my attention today. You are not the most fascinating city council in the United States. I just want you to know that. And Ken knows where this might be going, and he's leaving, and he's going to claim that he doesn't know me. But every once in a while, I try to follow what happens at the Los Angeles City Council just because they are such an entertaining group of individuals, and their public comment is a little bit different than ours. Anyway, I'm sure many of you are familiar with some of the controversy that's facing the Los Angeles Council right now, and so I was on their news site today just for a minute to see if anything had evolved over the weekend. And another story caught my eye about another massive lawsuit against the LAPD from a family of a young man who was in crisis. I've actually seen the critical incident video of this, this incident. He was suicidal, he was in crisis, he was holding a knife to himself, he was threatening himself, and after about 8 minutes of working with this young man, these officers shot him, and they killed him. I don't know where that's gonna land. I don't know whether that's going to fall out as legally justified. I don't know if that's gonna result in a dismissal of a lawsuit somewhere down the road. I just don't know. But as I read that story today and thought about what we were going to be doing here tonight, it was stark to me to see the difference and the professionalism of the members of the North Salt Lake, Utah Police Department compared to the 6 minutes of time in this professional police department that is supposedly world-renowned for their professionalism. And the comparison of the two, I'd like to start with just a brief video. Sherry, do you mind helping me again? Sherry's already helped me a little bit. Assistant Chief William and Brittany took a 2.5-hour video clip and put this together. Let me set it up before she hits play. The officers had been sent and dispatched to a male right across the street over here that was also suicidal. He was threatening to hurt himself. We also came to understand that he had been abusing some illegal substances. He had a number of other problems going on in his life. His facial expressions in this were critical enough that for you to get a brief understanding of what he was doing that we chose to leave that in. We did mute a little bit of the audio at one point. But this started at 6:11 in the evening, and it ended 2.5 hours later. 2.5 hours of this was going on with these five officers. I was lucky enough to be able to be in and out of this situation a little bit and witness this firsthand. And I came away deeply moved at the patience and the control and the care and the genuine love for the community that was shown to this person here. So if you would just bear with me and watch about a minute and a half of 2.5 hours of what happened.
Hey, put the knife down, man.
Put the knife down.
Put it down, okay? We don't want to hurt you, dude. Put the...
It worked when I sent it to you, too.
Knife down.
Drop the knife, dude.
Come on, drop it. Let's get you some help, okay? You're not in trouble right now. We want to get you some help, all right?
Knife.
Tyler, what's going on? Talk to me. How can we help you, dude? I want to get you some help, okay? We don't want to hurt you. We don't want to see you get hurt. We just want to help you out, okay? It's okay. You're about to say something. What was it? What are you thinking right now?
I'm so ashamed of myself.
Hey, don't feel that way.
It only does.
You don't need to feel ashamed, man. There you go. Just do it. Nice job, man.
Nice job.
Nice job. Thanks. Again, not the kind of video that makes the news every night. It's not flashy. There's not a chase. There's not shooting. There's not a fight that occurs. There is over 2.5 hours I've spent trying to help this man come down to a point where he can go get help. I'm not going to read all 5 commendations to you because they're very similar, but I would like to read Corporal Trevor Halls, who I would like to award tonight a Distinguished Service Award, which is one of our highest awards for just going above and beyond the efforts that may be normally expected. I think that's a little bit of a misnomer, though, because not only do we expect this of our officers in this community now, but they expect it from themselves. This is no longer really something that I would consider just above and beyond, but this is our standard. But to Corporal Halls, this letter and award are in recognition of your distinguished service and actions on Thursday, September 29th, 2022, in case number 22-2600. About 6 p.m., the police were called to the report of a suicidal male who was cutting himself. He'd locked himself in a bathroom. When you and your assisting officers arrived, you were met by a male roommate and a person who was also identified as the person in crisis girlfriend. You quickly ascertained this person was an imminent threat to himself. He was armed with two large knives that gave him the ability to carry out this violent and suicidal threat. You immediately began to utilize the talent and skill that you've developed to de-escalate a potentially violent situation involving substance abuse, mental illness, and other stress-related issues. In many cases, individuals demonstrating these behaviors can be convinced to get the help they badly need. In this case, however, the person remained threatening to himself and was not in a physical position to be easily restrained without placing him or the officers in very real harm. For over 2 hours, you empathized and reasoned with this person, helping him understand that there were other resources and options available. You also sincerely communicated to him his value to his loved ones as well as to this community. Although he took several furtive actions during the course of this and continued to cut himself, and I will note you couldn't see this, but he had cut himself in the wrists and in the throat area, and he was bleeding, and not just a small amount. He cut himself, and he would be completely non-communicative for long periods of time. You continued to move this situation slowly forward to avoid other actions that were needing to be considered at that time for a more forceful resolution and may have had a much worse outcome. Police officers must make very difficult decisions in dangerous and dynamic situations that have long-term effects on individuals, their friends, and their family, and the entire community. Having the wisdom, the skill, the training, and the patience to complete these is essential to a successful outcome. Both you and your assisting officers were preparing for the need to physically intervene and would have done so had it been needed, but you never lost the perspective of what you were doing or patience. I could tell this was an emotionally and mentally and even physically draining experience, but you are to be commended and awarded for this especially difficult event. It is also awarded with a paid day off to be used at your convenience with the department's needs. And each one of these officers that are being given this award tonight, the other four officers are being given the meritorious service, which is just one step down. But Corporal Hall spent, of that 2.5 hours, just over 2 hours in that situation negotiating with him. When he was done, you could just see and feel the exhaustion that he felt and the relief that he felt and that they all felt about the way this turned out. Towards the end, Officer Bradley stepped in and was able to be the one to kind of complete that. During this time, Officer Hansen, Officer Boyle, Officer Lewis were preparing other options if they would have needed to. And we're thankful that we didn't need to. Sometimes that does need to happen that way. But I would just like to award these men these recognitions in front of you as a city council, just to maybe remind me and all of us that we are served by great police officers in this city. So to each of them, I thank them and appreciate them. We collectively appreciate the time that you allow us to take to show you what we do from time to time and your support as a city council. So with that, Corporal Halls, I'd like to recognize you with the Distinguished Service Award for the North Salt Lake Police Department. And Officer Bradley. Officer Lewis. Officer Boyle. He wanted to bring Trace in. Trace thinks he's getting an award tonight, but he had nothing to do with this that night. And Officer Hansen. That doesn't mean he doesn't deserve awards, but...
Chief, while you're taking the picture, don't look at me, look at the camera. I just want to thank you for bringing this to us, and I want to encourage you to continue to bring this to us. And I also want you to bring back from us to your officers, but not today because you're here, so we'll just give it to you. How grateful we are for the protection that they provide, for the culture that they support, and I just feel like North Salt Lake is served by the best police officers. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Gordon. I agree with you 100%. And I would be remiss not to recognize the family and friends that came to see this also. They deserve to see what their loved ones are doing. And so thank you so much.
Thank you, Chief Black. And thank you, officers.
Thank you.
Next item is a community development update. And we'll turn this over to Sherry or Allie. Allie, okay.
Oh, somebody left their glasses. Is that yours?
Thanks, Sherry.
I don't know how I can follow that act. That was pretty good. Okay, I'm here today to give you an update on our progress for implementation of all of our long-range plans. And I'm trying to remind myself that this is not a performance review of the long-range planner, which is what it very much feels like to me. Okay, I can never do this correctly. Okay. So the plans I'd like to discuss today are the general plan, which was adopted in 2013, the town center master plan adopted in 2016, the active transportation plan adopted in 2020 and the moderate income housing plan, which was recently revised last month in 2022. I created a spreadsheet. I went through all of these plans with a fine-tooth comb and wrote down every goal, policy, and implementation strategy for all of them. There are 300 lines of implementation strategies, and I believe those have been provided to you today for some light reading if you want to fall asleep tonight. I then went through and marked them with all these categories on the right side of your screen as completed, partially completed, in progress, ongoing, not completed, update needed, and not applicable. I think completed and partially completed are pretty self-explanatory. In progress projects are ones that will have a start and a finish, but ones that we're actively working on. An example of that might be like the design standards that would be going in the form-based code. An ongoing project is generally policies or development-based strategies. So like we would require a back alleyway on all Highway 89 fronting projects. So it's ongoing because we are continually getting those projects. Or it might be a policy like the maintenance of our trails would be an implementation strategy that's ongoing. Not completed or just projects that we haven't started or finished yet. Update needed are things that are, they need to be looked at again and re-reviewed because there were changing conditions that that would affect the implementation of that. Not applicable means what it says, it's no longer applicable. And an example of that could be one of the strategies was to ensure the maintenance of the legacy highway trail system, which is maintained by Davis County, so it's not applicable. So I'm going to start with the general plan adopted in 2013. I went through, as I said, and looked at every implementation strategy that's in the general plan. We have 59% since 2013 that's completed, partially completed, or in progress. I think that's pretty good in the last 9 years. There is a 6% that needs an update, and I think there are more, but those were the really clear ones that needed updating. And so I think that is a good reason to update the general plan next year if we have the opportunity. The first element of the general plan is the land use element. And you can see that the majority of the land use element is in progress or ongoing, and that's because the majority of the land use is dependent on redevelopment or new development. And so it's not something that we can exactly start and finish right away because it's dependent on developers and landowners. Some examples of completed projects in this element are we adopted a street tree ordinance. We made multi-unit buildings a permitted use in RM20. I should say multi-unit residential buildings in the RM20 zone. And we reorganized the code enforcement department. So those are projects, implementation strategies that have been completed. In progress, we are pursuing annexation of unincorporated areas. We are reducing the retail parking standards by 25% in the form-based code. And then some ongoing items are to track and report moderately priced housing permits and the police department review of uses, which is we're always ongoing with our development review committee and our business licensing process. Here is the future land use map that was adopted in the general plan. And you can see we have made a lot of headway on this land use map. I wish I could point for you guys, but the Foxborough Village Center is light pink, and that's where Lee's is. Sherry will point for me. That was slated to be a village center, which I believe we have exceeded the expectations of that village center for sure. Also, the Amazon site was slated to be an activity center, as well as the establishment of the town center and Eaglewood Village. These were all village centers, activity centers, and then, of course, the town center. The next element is the transportation element. And 60% of this has been completed, partially completed, or is in progress right now. Some completed projects are the engineering study for the 1100 North Bridge, which you just heard of today. The redevelopment of the freeway interchange at I-215 and Redwood Road has been completed. In progress are transit stations on Highway 89. That one's changed a little bit. It was slated to be BRT back when we were doing the general plan. Now it's enhanced bus. And then working with UDOT to get freeway access for the town center. Another item that is in progress for the transportation element is that we've been working with UDOT on getting a corridor agreement for Highway 89. So that would determine if we're going to have bike lanes or a side path, the lane widths, the speed on the road, whether we would have mid-block pedestrian crossings. And so we've been meeting with them repeatedly to try to get that corridor agreement in place. Some ongoing items are just coordinating with UDOT, WFRC, and the state to meet the transportation objectives and supporting infill and redevelopment on 89 and Redwood. Next is the economic development element. 37% of this has been completed, partially completed, or in progress. A large chunk of the economic development efforts are ongoing. And so those are things that don't have a start and finish, but it's like incentivizing developments to come into the city, and things that have to continually be done. Some completed projects were that we established the Redwood Road and US 89 CDAs. And those are huge. That was really great to get those accomplished. So the Redwood Road one was created in 2013, and US 89 was created in 2015. So really quickly after the adoption of the general plan. Some items that are in progress are encouraging small retail and outdoor cafes in the town center. That's done through the form-based code and also through some of our CDA funding. And then doing a market study for the town center, which is in progress. We have grant funds for that. Some ongoing items are locating alternative funding sources. We're always looking for grants and other funding sources, and then regional and state coordination. The next item is the parks, trails, and recreation element. So in this one, a lot of this section is map-based. And so I didn't include the individual facilities on the spreadsheet. I just included them on the map. So if we're not including these individual facilities, 39% of this element is completed, partially completed, or in progress. Some examples of ongoing items for this is adding new trails and trail connections with developments. Maintenance of facilities and identifying vacant properties that would be suitable for parks or trails. On this map, the blue arrows are completed and the orange arrows are in progress. So I just kind of wanted to highlight some of these facilities. We'll start from left to right. Sherry, if you can kind of point at some of these. So the Jordan River Trail has been completed. This is the section from I-215 to Center Street. The Center Street Trail on the south side of Center Street in front of Amazon has been completed. The two connections on Redwood Road have been completed. There's one on the Haddad property next to the Foxborough Wetlands, and a pedestrian walkway that goes through the Lee's site, or it might go through between Morella and Lee's. And then in progress is the Redwood Road side path, which we have funding for. We have grant funding for, and it should be completed within the next couple of years. And those are some infill spots that are still missing on that Redwood Road side path. 1100 North has a bike lane. Let's go up to Orchard Drive, I guess. So Orchard Drive up by the Winnie has a bike lane, and also south of Center Street, Orchard Drive has the bike lane completed there. The Spring Hill Geologic Park has a trail going through it, and the Gregerson Trail right above it. We have the bike lane on Eagle Ridge Drive is completed, in addition to the Wild Rose Trail connection that goes down into Eaglewood Village. And then the Gary Way Trail up to the golf course and the bike lane on Eaglewood Drive are both completed. And then I did get the Gary Way Trail. Then the next item is in progress, which is the Bonneville Shoreline Trail and the connections to that. Now, of course, the alignment has changed pretty significantly since the general plan. It's no longer going through Eaglewood Cove, but we do still recommend that the Woodbriar Trailhead remain in the plan going forward. And because I figure Stan will probably have some questions about the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, the yellow line is the Bonneville Shoreline Trail alignment. And as I understand it, it's been built to this point. And this is wild. The Wild Rose Trail is black. It's kind of hard to see, sorry. The black section is the Wild Rose Trail system. So I believe it's been built up to Wild Rose. Now we've met with Davis County and Salt Lake City and Avid Trails. That's the trail builder. And Avid Trails went out and GPSed their recommended connections to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, and that's the light blue line. We are recommending, and this was when Paul was a city engineer, so the left trail connection that has the green arrow. And then we were not recommending the red arrow, which is the alternate connection, because it just is really long and would cost a lot more money. And we also recommend, with the addition of that trail connection in green arrow, that we close the user trail that it currently exists. So the user trail, you can get to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail right now from the Wild Rose Trail system using this user trail, but it's something like a 19% grade. So we wanted to get something that was more along the lines of a 5% grade that connection.
And very rocky and very
ugly. Yes, it's a scramble.
If you're on a bike, it's dangerous.
Definitely. So we've been working with Davis County, who's been trying to work with Salt Lake City to make a connection for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail that is closer out onto the Salt Lake City section of Bonneville Shoreline Trail, so that Tunnel Springs would effectively be the trailhead for the Davis County section. But they've run into some issues with the watershed people in Salt Lake City. So temporarily, Davis County has recommended that we end the trail at Wild Rose and make this connection until they can work out those issues with Salt Lake City. So I just wanted to give you that update. Did you have any more questions about that, Stan?
Allie, can you, where is the, if I called it the antenna array?
It's down south here. It'd be farther south, Mayor.
It's not, okay.
It's not on this.
Do you mean in Salt Lake City?
Yeah.
No, sorry. I was talking about the one, I think it's, no, Hidden Lakes area. I think our city has a direct line of sight.
Oh, in Bountiful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so it's pretty far north of this.
Okay. It's just on the north side or the east side of the golf course.
Right. So this is probably a better map. I mean, even though that's not the alignment, it's like up in that neighborhood just north of our city boundary.
That's right.
Okay. There's a great, from that, you can see our new water tanks really nicely.
Are there any more questions about the Bonneville Shoreline Trail?
The only question I have, so you got the star there and the black line. Is that our current Wild Rose Trail where the black line is?
The black line
well, coming
below
up,
the star.
No, coming above the star.
The steep part.
That part?
Is that the steep part there?
That's where's the user trail.
Okay.
So that was not developed by us. It's just by people stomping
right.
it down.
So the star is where the bench is now.
Yes, that's
okay.
Sunset Point, I think it's called.
Well, Sunset Point's on the other side of the canyon.
Oh, okay. I'm mistaken. Yes, that's where the bench is.
Okay.
And so we would recommend closing off
sure.
the 19% grade trail and opening up the 5% grade trail.
That's the old pipeline road, by the way. It used to be a road that you could drive up it, but now it's kind of overgrown, but just so you know.
Okay. Okay, so in the parks, trails, and recreation, I think is what it's called, section, they had listed some recommended parks and recommended trails. The items in blue have been completed. The items in orange are in progress. Black has not been completed, and red is we need to revisit and consider if we still want to do that. So as you can see, we've completed Foxborough South Park. Since 2013, we've completed Foxborough South Park, Foxborough North Mini Park, City Hall Park, which is this Veterans Memorial, Spring Hill Geologic Park, the Spring Hill Geologic Trail, the Eaglewood Village Trail, and then in progress, our Hatch Park expansion, the Highway 89 Trail, which is the side path along the highway, Center Street Trail, Bonneville Shoreline Trail, and the infill trail on Redwood Road that I spoke about earlier. The next section of the general plan is the Town Center and Highway 89 corridor. This is heavily in progress. But I would say something like 80 to 85% of that in progress section will be knocked back to completed as soon as we adopt the form-based code.
What's the timeline on that?
I'll let Sherry answer that.
I was going to address that. So we've been sidelined a little bit with the big FEMA grant that Allie has been working on tirelessly for the entire month of September, and then she headed into this review of the general plan and all of our planning documents as well. But we plan to get back on track the first part of November with the Planning Commission and hopefully have it to you by the first part of January.
So, like I said, the once the form-based code is adopted, that will be knocked back to completed. In the interim, we've been doing P-District rezones, and we've been adopting some of those design standards into the P-District. So it's kind of in progress, but partially completed. So some of the completed projects in this section are Town Center-specific signage, which we did complete a Town Center branding and wayfinding study. So we have the design for all the signage in the Town Center. And then the adoption of a Town Center master plan. In progress are design guidelines, which will be in the form-based code, and the expansion of Hatch Park. And then ongoing are encouraging redevelopment of properties on the north side of 150 North, and then increasing events at Hatch Park. And that will happen kind of more intensely once we redevelop Hatch Park. I just wanted to show you kind of how far we've come since 2013. Just the idea of creating a town center came from the general plan in 2013. Originally, we had three different districts within the town center, which now with the form-based code, there are several different sub-districts which accomplish a similar thing. We also had a plan for where we wanted the BRT stations, which we still anticipate that they're approximately the same locations for the enhanced bus, and we still have the desire for a front runner station on Center Street. The next element is the Redwood Road District. 44% of this item is completed or partially completed. Some of those projects are to expand the sign district boundaries for S2 and to create a street tree program for Redwood Road, which we've done. In progress are to restrict pole signs in the PAZD and the Foxborough Village Overlay. So the PAZD was a zoning district that was proposed for the Amazon site. And then the Foxborough Village Overlay was for the Lee's site.
PAZD was way better than the SPAZD, which I think didn't make any sense. Spazzed.
So we have restricted pole signs in the development agreement for the Lee's site. Ongoing items are addressing nonconformance of outdoor storage and conducting intersection studies when development occurs near those major intersections. This is the Redwood Road District on the left from the general plan, and I just wanted to show you the CDA that was created that same year that follows almost exactly the same boundaries. And then this was the Foxborough Village Overlay Zone, which is the Lee's site. And I just wanted to show you that zone and some of the concepts that they had. The light purple is commercial and office. The red is commercial retail. And the orange is higher density residential. And so I think we've pretty much followed the top right concept. On the right side of the screen is our zoning for that area, which shows a planned district. But you can see that it's retail, commercial, and then there's some multifamily residential to the north. These were the concepts for, I think it was called the Regional Activity Center in the general plan. And on the right shows the zoning. So this plan probably needs to be revisited with the general plan update next year. It was decided against multifamily in this area, and that changed the land use pattern pretty significantly in regards to the street layout in this area. And with the development of Amazon there, that kind of changed the nature of the west side of this development. There's still planned to have commercial, retail, and office on Redwood Road. And then on the north side of Center Street, we have CG zoning, which is general commercial. And then we have an existing uses overlay, which was a zoning district created specifically for some of these properties to allow we didn't want to harm the existing businesses that were in operation, but we didn't necessarily want new businesses of the same manufacturing nature to go in. So the existing uses overlay allows that specific use to continue, but then anything outside of that use has to comply with the underlying zone, which is the general commercial zone. Okay, on to, so that's the general plan. That's a wrap. And then the Town Center Master Plan was adopted in 2016. 46% has been completed, partially completed, or is in progress. And like I mentioned earlier, the form-based code is a big chunk of the in-progress section. Some completed projects for this have been bike lanes added to Orchard Drive, a branding study was completed, and a parking analysis is done for the Town Center. In progress, Town Center-specific zoning district, that'll be the form-based code, and then a Town Center market study, which we're working on right now. Ongoing is to consolidate driveways with redevelopment and to increase on-street parking. I just wanted to show you the land use concept in the Town Center Master Plan. I think we've followed this pretty well with our redevelopment. You can see the city center development just north of City Hall is slated to be mixed use, which we have accomplished. And the Town Plaza development to the east of us along 130 East is also mixed use, and the Williamsburg development is slated for mixed use as well. Okay.
Out of sheer paranoia, I think a casual observer, when they hear that, would think, oh, so the city's in there actively developing those properties, and we know, we facilitate through zoning, letting the private sector come to us, willing landowners coming to us who say, we want to do something with our property, and we say, go right ahead, it's consistent with the plan.
Right.
So we all know that, but sometimes in the way we talk about this, we can give off this message like, we are the developer, we're really not the developer.
Thanks for creating that decision.
So you're not lining your pockets? Allie, real quickly, what is the status of Williamsburg at this point? Does anyone?
Oh no, Sherry left.
I can answer that. I was in the last meeting
okay.
with Sherry. They're actually exploring. They're exploring some other development options, and they would like to come to us with a proposal to have the city's participation facilitation, really, to do some financing that's now available to them through a couple of bills that were recently passed in the legislature. So they're putting a plan together. They've hired a new consultant. I'll put my pen down so I don't. They've hired a new consulting group to work on their business plan, and they want to come forward and get their project finished when that plan is done. So it'll require some actions on the council's part, but anyway, that's where they are. They've been hit really hard by the rising interest rates, availability of capital, and so a couple of the new programs to encourage low and moderate income housing will help that development, and then they'll commit to a certain number of housing units that will be available for low and moderate income housing. So that's the next step you'll see, probably in a couple of months. It's not dead, but it's
just mostly dead.
No, it's. I think they're working on it, and I do think the market has harmed that project a little bit.
Dan's never seen Monty Python.
I guess not.
I'm an optimist.
Monty Python, wasn't it Princess Bride? You thinking of Princess Bride?
I think the phrase is, well, I got better. Or, anyway.
I'm not dead, I'm mostly dead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember the Princess Bride one. No, he's not dead. He's just mostly dead.
Okay. So, Ted, thank you for the distinction. Sometimes I forget that people don't speak planner ease. I've had several conversations in the past couple of months with people where I talk about park strips and they have no idea what I'm talking about, and it blows my mind. So sometimes I forget that. Okay, looking at this map, this is the pedestrian and bicycle network in the Town Center Master Plan. The blue is completed and the orange is in progress. So the Town Center I-15 trail, thank you, Sherry or Wendy, whoever's doing that, is in progress. We have funding. We're working with the property owners to get agreements and easements in place. And then the blue items are, of course, a connection to Hatch Park through the property that we acquired there, and then the bike lane on Orchard Drive and a sidewalk on the east side of Orchard Drive as well.
So as you go through this, I've been thinking about, well, what should we as a council do tonight versus the next few months versus waiting until the next general plan, right? Like, what do we do with this information? And I don't know if it makes sense to drill down into any particular piece tonight or not. This one is one of the ones that I've been wanting to talk about as a council, and simply because, hey, look, there's a lot of yellow. In other words, there's a lot of stuff we haven't moved forward. And there may be good reason for that, but we should talk about it. And so it may not be the right time to talk about it right now as we're going through a big list. I don't know if there's a suggestion on that, but I think that the question of do we want to advance, and if so, how, some of these projects, I think would be great. And one of them is Highway 89, which may just dovetail nicely with the corridor plan, but maybe not completely. Maybe we have to do the corridor plan plus, not sure. Right, and then there's the Orchard Drive or two on there. Do you want to comment on that, or do you have advice? Or
I did just want to mention that I will be going over the I will be going over the active transportation plan a little bit later. I think it's next.
Okay, forgive me. And I actually got so excited, I thought you were already doing that. So.
I know you care about it a lot. So I did make a big list for the active transportation plan and ones that specifically we need some guidance on.
I do have a suggestion. I think, because I think your question is a really great question. It's one that, as we tried to report back to the council with this item, which I think is a great summary of where we are with all of the general plans we've adopted, that whole umbrella of the city's general plan. We've thought about how do we drill down together as a group to actually help us all make decisions. What are the next set of projects? But my suggestion would be if we want to, and it does take time, but if we wanted to take the active transportation plan and this town center master plan, for example, and have another work meeting just on those projects, I think that would be an appropriate next step. And really help the staff to know where the council wants to go. What plans do you want to update? What projects do you want to include? And I know that because I've talked to most of you, I know that there are projects not adopted in any general plan that are important to certain council members. New trails we've talked about, other initiatives we've talked about, things that weren't adopted in the plan that we've worked on since. So it would be good to have some time set aside to get more specific and be able to make some progress. So that's my suggestion.
That makes sense to me too.
Okay. The next is the vehicle and transit network in the town center. This particular map is heavily dependent on UDOT and UTA. So there's not a lot of progress we can make without their cooperation and their movement. However, the corridor agreement with US 89 is something that we are making progress on. We've also completed some parking across from City Hall. It was originally slated to be angled parking, but the engineering department determined that it wasn't safe to be angled parking in that location, so it ended up being parallel on-street parking. And then we put on-street parking on 130 East as well. We're also still working. It shows a future interchange at the end of Eagle Ridge Drive in the Williamsburg project. That's still being discussed. So that's a part of this as well. The next item is the parks and open space. All the hatched areas were proposed in 2016. So we have acquired all the properties around Hatch Park with the exception of two properties on 150 North. And then we required with the City Center development that they do the installation of a plaza there to support the transit that would be going in on Highway 89. The remainder of the area here really needs to be done with redevelopment, or the property needs to be acquired, or we need to get easements specifically for the Bamberger Trail and the extension out to Main Street. I think it's called the Bamberger Linear Park or something like that in the master plan. Okay, moving on to the active transportation plan that was adopted in 2020. Again, this one, when I went through and marked them as completed, in progress, all those things. I did not include specific facilities because they're map-based. So some examples of what's in progress are requiring bicycle amenities with developments. That's done with the form-based code. Shared mobility, like our scooters that are coming in, or allowing green bikes, things like that. And things that have not been completed in that 42% are mostly policy-based, like a complete streets policy, or implementing programs like bike to work or school days, open streets events, things like that. Here's what you were looking for, Ted. This is the network recommendations from the active transportation plan. So the yellow arrows, and this was just 2 years ago that it was adopted, the orange arrows are items that are in progress. That includes the side path on Highway 89, the side path on Redwood Road that's infill, and then that Town Center I-15 trail. And then also we had listed a 2600 South interchange as future study needed, and that is currently being studied with the environmental impact statement report for the I-15 reconstruction. Some items that are to be completed still are 1100 North Bike Lane west of Redwood Road, Center Street Bike Lane west of Foxborough Drive, Redwood Road side path on the west side south of Center Street, the 400 West side path, the Center Street side path east of 400 West leading into the Town Center, the Overland and Pacific side path, which we've made a little headway on with a sidewalk on Overland in front of Colonial Woods Mobile Home Park, the 350 North Bike Lane, which hopefully will extend up to 3800 South, the Bamberger Trail and the 232 North Main multi-use path. We have on there a Davis Boulevard bike lane, and that's just that very small connection to the east a little bit. There you go. To Bountiful. Bountiful has a bike lane on Davis Boulevard. So that will either happen with development, or there may be an opportunity, if the road never goes through, to just punch a bike path through there. And then, of course, the Eagle Ridge Drive side path in front of the golf course. Eagle Ridge Drive, yeah. There are three items that I put in as additional consideration needed. These are some pretty major facilities that I think need some more discussion from the council to give us some guidance as staff. The Main Street bike lane would require getting more right-of-way in front of people's homes and or restricting parking on one or both sides of Main Street. So that seems like a policy decision for the council. It is possible that we could just paint share the road markings on Main Street and not have to alter the right-of-way. So that's a consideration. The Orchard Drive separated bike lane. A separated bike lane is a physical separation between the bike lane and the vehicle travel lane. So we had discussed like flexible delineators going in that location, but the impacts of that are difficulty with snow plowing. Where will people put their garbage cans on garbage day? And then it would restrict parking on Orchard Drive in front of people's homes. So that's another policy decision. And then the Eagle Ridge Drive buffered bike lane would go from the roundabout up to Eagle Point Drive. And a buffered bike lane is not a physical separation, but it's just a painted separation, usually like 2 feet of separation between the bike lane and the travel lane. They did a conceptual drawing of this one in the active transportation plan because it was a priority project, and the conceptual drawing restricted, we didn't have to get more right of way, it was just repainting, but it restricts parking on the north side of Eagle Ridge Drive. So that's one that we could use some more guidance from the council on. And that is slated to be, there's an overlay, is that the right term? Next year sometime, where they will be repainting the striping. And so we had hoped to get some guidance before we are repainting the striping on the road, so that if we are going to repaint it, we have the opportunity to do that then.
Can I just make a comment on Eagle Ridge Drive? I guess I was fascinated by their speaker we had at the league meeting. Every time I drive past a sign flashing at me saying I'm speeding, I now think, what a poorly designed road this is.
Yeah.
Because I would never speed unless it was poorly designed. But it seems like to me that creating the bike lane there would have a traffic calming effect, and seems like a win-win.
There is a current bike lane there. It's just not a buffered bike lane. Yeah.
So
and there's parking in the bike lane.
I guess in my mind, I would think there's a bike lane, but what if we had a bike lane with, and then two lines that encroached more into the street or something, so that there was a, and then it would make the street narrower.
You exactly described a buffered bike lane.
Okay, perfect.
But I think when Allie says it requires a policy decision by the council, restricting parking on one side of Eagle Ridge Drive is not a small matter for those folks
and
who live
I
on
don't
Eagle
know
Ridge
that
Drive.
That's necessary.
Just on the south side, it's upsetting.
Well, it might be upsetting for both sides of the street, but
I mean, there's a bike lane in front of my house.
Same here.
But we can park in it.
People can park inside the bike lane. And I guess that's the difference here, and why she raised it.
So the buffered bike lane is just a larger paint border, right? And separates the bike.
It's a painted bike lane that has.
How is it different from bike lanes we have now?
People are not allowed to park in it.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think in the active transportation plan, one of the policies that they recommended for adoption was no parking in bike lanes anywhere, and enforcement. So with the buffered bike lane, it's just like a larger buffer between the traffic lane and the bike lane. On standard bike lanes, there is no buffer. The paint is the line between, but on the buffered bike lane, there's an extra 2 feet. Paint, just a buffer area, yeah. It's just paint, it's not a physical separation. Sometimes striped diagonally, yeah.
So I guess I'll just weigh in and say, I think a buffered bike lane sounds great. To restrict parking on streets for the one or two bikes a day that might go up it or down it seems draconian to me. But.
Can I ask a question, Allie?
Yeah.
Is there a different type of bike lane, buffered bike lane or other, that includes the graphic image of a bicycle in the lane? Because I look at the map on Redwood Road and 1100 North, there are those lines, but I would not have seen that as a bike lane, as just, you know, somebody in the neighborhood. Do we have those anywhere in the city, or is that a different type of bike lane?
It's not a different type of bike lane. It's just a painting method. So we do have that in different areas. I think we have it on Eagle Ridge Drive currently. Orchard Drive, 1100 North, those are all locations that you can see the painted biker in the bike lane.
Thank you.
And there are other methods of painting a bike lane as well. In Salt Lake, they paint them green. So it's very clear that that's a bike lane.
I do like that idea of some type of additional distinction to show that it's a bike lane than just the one line, like two lines or something.
Yeah. Can I make a comment? You were going
to
say something.
I was just going to say, if you want to see what not to do, go to Salt Lake City and go up 3rd South. Yeah. It's incredibly lame, not to mention violations of fire codes and things. Yeah.
I think they're doing what they want it to do, though, which makes people not want to drive there.
I think it killed Tsukasa, which was like the worst thing of all.
Well, anytime you can get up, you park your car and the passenger gets out and swings his door out into the bike lane, I think that's poor planning.
I think there are trade-offs for sure. And the parking question is one of those cases. And so for me, I think your point is a good one on its surface. And what I would want to know is how many people park there on a peak day. If there was a restriction, would it have a meaningful impact? Or would people simply have to consolidate their parking on one side? Further, what are the safety disadvantages of having people park in the bike lane? Would it cause an unsafe case? Remember when Mark Eaton died in St. George? Yeah. He was going out of a bike lane because of a car that he had to get around. Now, that's an anecdote, but it would be good for us to have data to just kind of understand some of these pros and cons and then kind of weigh in. You know, I don't want to disagree. I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but I would like to get more information.
Can I ask a couple questions? If you only have the bike lane on one side of the road, do people going up and down, are they in the same bike lane? Does that make sense? Like, if I'm on Eagle Ridge and it's the south side of the road that is a bike lane and I want to go down the hill, do I go down on the south side of the road in the bike lane?
I think they go with the speed of traffic. They probably exceed cars' speed.
Yes. The proposal is to have a bike lane on both sides. Buffered bike lane both sides, but restricting parking on the downhill side. And the reasoning that our consultant put that in is because people getting doored. So if you're parked in the bike lane or you're parked adjacent to a bike lane and you whip open your door and someone's going 35 miles per hour down Eagle Ridge Drive, they could get really injured. So that was their reasoning for restricting the parking on just the one side.
And also one thing I want to ask is, if you restrict parking on one side of the street, I know jaywalking goes up, right? But that's a safety concern that is considered as well, right?
Yes, that's a big safety concern from the staff as well, is where can we have a safe crossing to get to the south side of Eagle Ridge Drive. Do you want to further discuss this section, or do you want to move on to the remainder?
I think, yeah. I mean, you've given us things to think about. So at some point when you bring it back to us, we'll have thought about it. How's that?
Sounds great. Okay. We only have a few more slides. This is still in the active transportation plan. These are some recommended connections, which are smaller connections that will connect larger facilities. So connecting different pedestrian, like connecting a side path to a sidewalk or something like that. So some of these are like, they recommended putting some stairs or a pathway south of City Hall here on this triangular piece of property to get up to the transit on Highway 89, or some stairs between the local government's trust and Town Plaza to get people to and from the bus on Highway 89. So we have two of these in progress. One is a pedestrian activated signal on US 89 here at the terminus of Main Street. And we're hoping to get that into a corridor agreement with UDOT. And then the other is a pathway connection across the Foxborough wetlands, which of course that project is in progress already. And there would be a boardwalk connection across.
Have you coordinated with Wasatch Front Regional Council on this particular set? That's my day job, are gathering first, last mile ideas, things that connect people to town centers or transit stations that we can bundle into funding requests.
That is good information. Should I send that to Hugh Van Wagenen?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm making myself a note so I can do that tomorrow. Okay. Last but not least is the moderate income housing plan, which was revised only a month ago. So you'll notice that nothing's been completed yet because we've only had a few weeks. The 23% is not completed. It's kind of hard to differentiate between those colors. But we are in progress on some of these implementation strategies. Allowing for single room occupancy developments is something that's in our form-based code draft. And then reducing parking requirements for housing in the town center is also in the draft. Some ongoing items are, we're always referring people to the Davis Community Housing Authority for their housing programs, and then using CDA funds to incentivize moderate income housing developments in the town center is always ongoing. And that is the end of my presentation, unless there are some, do you have any other questions?
Woohoo!
Very good. Very good presentation.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you.
Too bad that wasn't your review, huh?
No, maybe I should make it my performance review.
Very good.
Okay.
We can skip a review since we all clapped. Yes. It's a good replacement.
High fives, I think, count.
Can we get electronic of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next item is approval of city council minutes for October 4th and October 5th.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, because we met Adelaide on the 5th.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't have anything to say about those. I did have a question, correction, on line 287. It doesn't make any sense when I say that people are going to be begging to move in if you don't mention that Brian actually said it two paragraphs above. So either take that out and say maybe more likely to want to move in. I don't mean move in, be annexed. Or add somewhere that Brian said, I support this, and in a year they'll be begging us to do it if we don't do it now. Because that's why I said, let's wait till they're begging us.
I wanted to I'm sure this is a direct quote from me, so, but on line 272, he mentioned the county was tired of providing services. That's a poor choice of words.
Is it though?
How does?
I think it's a good choice.
They're anxious to not provide services anymore. I don't know.
County is trying to adopt their general plan that they've had for years.
Yeah. Feel free to make me look more intelligent there. And and then on line 311. Maybe change that, saying that they're fine with the status quo. I think my point would be that perhaps the status quo is no longer an option. I don't know. My point there was, if you're going against the status quo, no one's going to support it. But if the status quo is no longer an option, then maybe our annexation looks more attractive to them.
Mm. Mayor, I have some amendments, but I send them to Ken, and I sent them to
Wendy
ahead of time. But I'll just identify them. I've actually done cross-outs and whatnot. But so at line 151, I added the questions that I asked the judge while we were in chambers. Mm. They were out of the minutes, and those questions were about due process concerns because it's so remote, the need for privacy in the assistance area, and also the need for security. I've spelled it out, and it's provided. I don't need to read it to you, but it's those three concepts. And then on line 303, it says Councilmember Baskin mentioned again, but really what I had done was identified the concerns raised by Councilmember Van Langenfeld, such as, and then she talked about infrastructure and all of that. So I was parroting what she had said to say, I've heard her, and I agree with those. But she had said it first, just like you were saying, Brian said first. So that's the change on line 303. And then on lines 434 through 443, this was the discussion we had on the development agreement. And it was, when I read it, it was just so difficult to comprehend. So I've changed it to just simply say, Councilmember Baskin asked for clarification on how the exception would work as stated in the development agreement. Crossed out all the rest, and then she read the language, which said the developer could temporarily retain sole ownership and rent any number of units for up to 3 years. Then delete the remainder of the paragraph, because it's just almost so circuitous. And it was probably because of the way I was speaking. No question. But that would improve it so that people could understand what happened there.
Okay, I'll jump in too. I've got a change on lines 292 and 293. And just the tenor, I think, was not accurate. And it's sort of, anyway, it reads, Councilmember Knowlton said anytime there was a big change, such as the annexation, residents could be emotional. And I would just change it to say, such as the annexation, it is an emotional issue that may be less acute over time.
Oh, that's better.
So the individuals are not being emotional. By its very nature, it is emotional for everybody, and that emotional aspect falls over time. Shall I restate what I might change, or did you catch it? Okay, thanks.
Any other additions, corrections?
One other. Oh.
Not for that date, sorry.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to amend the minutes of October 4th, 2022, as amended.
I'll second it.
Have a motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes. Any corrections on October 5th?
Yes, I have just one. And Adelaide is spelled differently. The name is Adelaide. Yep. It's the top of that. It says different spelling.
Oh, yeah.
Good catch.
Good catch.
Our kids
eight,
went there.
Eight lead.
I went there.
Okay. Do we have a motion on October 5th?
I move that we approve the minutes of October 5th with the correction to Adelaide.
Just quickly, I'm going to abstain from voting because I wasn't there.
I'll second.
Have a motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes with one abstention. Next item. Action items. Any updates there? Additions, corrections, deletions?
Can I make a suggestion, Ken?
Yes.
We had talked a while ago about the possibility of having a work session that was kind of a priority session where council members could brainstorm or identify what our priorities for them in the coming year. Could we have that on some upcoming work session?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Nothing on action items?
I don't see my hands up, but I can't see it now.
Tell you what, Stan, we can come back to it if you find it.
Yeah, that's fine, I think.
Okay.
I think I'm good now.
Council reports. Should we start with Elisa?
Thank you. That's my first item. Thank you, Allie, who's not here, but also everyone else in the city and the staff. I continue to be impressed at the professionalism and expertise that everyone here has. I attended on behalf of the Health and Wellness Committee the Senior Lunch Bunch this last week, I believe it was, week before last, to introduce county professionals who offer services in aging. One of the goals of the Health and Wellness Committee has been to consider senior services in our city, but with the consideration that we do not want to duplicate any services that are already being provided in the county. So they came and presented, and then the Health and Wellness Committee wants to collect information at the November meeting about priorities from that group that might, and then we will take back to our meeting to discuss where those might be. So that's kind of in the works, and I just wanted to update the council. Next Tuesday, the Youth City Council, also with the Foxborough Student Council, will be doing the mobile food pantry in the Foxborough Terrace Apartments, which I think is a really interesting and fun collaboration to have the elementary school students and the high school students working together to do that. I want to also say thank you to all of the planners, long range, engineering, and otherwise, who required the trees in Foxborough. They're mature now and absolutely gorgeous this fall, and every time I drive down the streets, I think, ooh, some planners did a good job because it is so pretty. And then a thank you. Yeah, good job. I think a lot of you were, or on the council even. And then a thank you for the ULCT conference as well. I love going to that conference. I always learn a lot that I can take back to be better at what we do. And I was glad to see all of you there. That's it.
Natalie?
I have nothing to report. I do have a question, and I'm going to ask it offline. So, Ken, I have a question for you later.
Great. I'll just be getting a churro and hanging out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Put that in the minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go get me a churro.
Make sure you spell
that. Hold on, is that a motion to adjourn?
I don't really want a churro. I'm just saying,
you
just
gotta get. Yeah. All right, Stan.
I don't know if I have a report, but I went back over these action items, and number 17 on the trail. Just says staff feels the best solution is require Lakeview Rock products to meet with the SWPPP regulations, so no dirt is deposited along the road. Have we done anything as far as just making the suggestion from staff, or have we contacted somebody, or is there more that we should be doing there?
There's certainly more that we could do.
Okay.
I've had some pretty ineffective communications with Lakeview Rock Products in the last 6 months.
What?
And so we should do more. That response wasn't meant to really just put off more effective strategies. I think physically we could do more. We could make improvements to the street so that dirt doesn't get on that trail. It's one of the more common complaints we have from bikers and commuters, that we have rocks, we have dirt, and when it rains, that dirt becomes slick like ice. So we'll put some more thought into that, into a more realistic answer, because making Lakeview Rock Products do anything is a poor strategy, because they won't do it.
Is there anybody else other than the city that regulates the SWPPP?
Tons of people, and they have about as much luck as we do.
I thought that was one of those federal things that you can fine people and...
Well, we could look at fining.
I mean, or somebody could. I mean, you'd think that...
You know, we could fine for SWIP violations, but that just ups the... irritation between us. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but
no, I understand.
We'll look at that. We'll report back to you on that one.
Okay.
That is a good assignment for us to get more diligent about.
Okay.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Lisa.
A few things to report. The Senior Lunch Bunch is sort of doing a revamp. We met and talked with the people, had a kind of a brainstorm session. during the lunch about options for improving the program. After that, we've now lost our volunteers. We had four, and now I think we're down to one. So that's a worry to me. Wendy and I are going to meet and talk about that. I think an older woman came in, and I think she was frightened, and she realized that they thought she was going to be in charge. And then the next day, she says, I really can't volunteer, which I didn't blame her. It was pretty frightening. Anyway, so the golf committee didn't meet, but they will next month. But there's excellent progress. Numbers are great, and the clubhouse is coming together.
Do we know a completion date on the clubhouse?
Mid-November is, and end of November, the entire project is supposed to be complete.
I had suggested at one point to Tyler that we have a kind of an open house when it's done.
We'll look at that. I know he and I have talked about
it. It's kind of a busy time of year.
It would be easier if the contractor were a little more reliable on his timetables, because that's been a frustration in the entire project. I know that on December 6th, no matter what condition the clubhouse is in, we are having a council dinner with our committees and ourselves and our spouses. December 6th.
That's Pearl Harbor Day, or is that December 7th?
It's Pearl Harbor Day Eve.
Eve, there you go.
So,
and then
hopefully it'll be done by then.
Okay. Two other things, and these are just ideas that I've been thinking about. In the drought-ridden world that we are living, I'm wondering if we want to have some involvement with North Salt Lake on the Great Salt Lake interactions, that we want to have maybe somebody who's attending some of these important forums and providing feedback to us, reporting back, because it is part of our city. And so that's one suggestion. The other is the Weber Basin Conservancy, Water Conservancy District, will reimburse people for the cost for flipping the strips. And maybe I think we should do an article or something about that, because I think maybe we need to advertise. I mean, we've done great in terms of explaining where we are, but maybe a feature on that in the next newsletter.
We've done that.
The feature
for we did that a couple of months ago when we first adopted the Flip the Strip program. We did a big expose on it, social media, and we had lots of responses. I think I agree
on the Weber Basin Water Conservancy piece. Okay. Yeah.
I agree we should do it again, but I think that what we should do is perhaps in February or March, as people think about the spring.
Yeah, springtime.
So
just want to make sure the word gets out, because I know that Jordan River is doing, and they're doing, giving a lot of money out for a lot of people doing amazing things.
Lisa, just on a side note, the company I work for, we built 2 large warehouses right off I-215 and 2200 North. If you're driving on I-215, they're just right there. And the city required us to put in extensive landscaping, large grass strips, probably 30 feet wide, and the length of these buildings, and these buildings are very big. And we just are finishing up 2 new ones just north of it. Here it is 2 years later, and I thought, there's no way on earth they're going to make us landscape those. They did. We had to put grass in on both of them, just like the other two.
Did it have to be grass, or could it have been like xeriscape?
It had to be grass.
They stink.
Did it have to be bluegrass?
Which city was this in?
Salt Lake.
They do have that new seed that they aren't sharing with anybody.
Yeah. Anyway, I was really stunned. I just couldn't believe that.
One other thing is that you two League of Cities and Towns was, I thought, especially good this year. I thought that the training, the programs were better than they've ever been. And I think it might be nice if, as a city council and mayor, we write a thank you letter, just even on a thank you card, and just say, we really enjoyed the session, and then sign it. Because I think so often people who work so hard don't get that kind of praise.
Yeah.
And we need to reward them, because it was so good.
Plus, they honored us.
Oh, I didn't even think of that, but they did honor us. But I think it'd be nice if we could put together a letter. It can just be a note card, as far as I'm concerned, that we all sign. It doesn't have to be really formal, but just a recognition. Thanks.
Ted?
So we had the North Salt Lake Reads event last week, which was terrific, and author Melanie Hawkins was here in this room and shared her tips and lessons learned to a nice room, and it was just a really lovely event. And if you see any of the Parks, Arts, and Trails people who say the name of that committee different every single time, then just tell them you appreciate them, because they're awesome. In the I-15 environmental impact statement process, they went through the purpose and need phase, and now they're moving into the alternatives phase. And I'm tracking that through my day job. I know that Ken and Sherry and Karen and others are tracking it on the city. I think that there will be things to talk about in the next little bit on that. So I don't know why I'm even talking about it, because I don't actually have anything to talk about on, other than that there will be things to talk about in the future. That's all for me.
It's a good reminder. Thank you. Oh, yes. Do we have them scheduled? November 15th, that group is coming to a council work session.
Okay, great.
That same group that you're talking about, the next phase of the project.
Yeah. Attorney report, Todd, or I thought I saw you come in.
Yeah, nothing for me tonight, Mayor.
Okay. Mayor's report. Tomorrow night we have the photo contest. Is that correct?
Yes.
Here at, I think, 7. Fire district, I'm reporting something just because it's kind of unusual. We had a fatality in Centerville and a fire. Yeah. We've gotten so good at fire codes and building things that it's unusual to have someone die. And then I just had one little, let me find my notes here. No surprise, mosquitoes have been bad this fall. We just had the perfect storm again. It rained really hard. We had that torrential rain, flooded the areas out in the lake that have dried up and stuff. And then we had 100-degree days for like 7 straight days. And it just absolutely unleashed them on us. We are, for the first time ever, we are still spraying by airplane in October. Never done that before. Usually we have a hard freeze or something that kills them off. And then we're also still running the trucks, spraying. This is the latest they've ever run the trucks.
Is there going to be a hard freeze next week?
There's supposed to be something this weekend.
This weekend.
Yeah. So
I don't think it's going to get hard. I think it's about 40 degrees is the forecast.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they're so small, and so plentiful and so small, these mosquitoes.
Yeah.
But they're up in our area. So citywide, we've been hit.
Yeah. And I wanted to just share, when we have, so our neighbors to the east that are a little strange, those people in Colorado, but they don't.
Far east.
Yeah, they don't. They have very restrictive spraying things with mosquitoes. And we had 6 cases of West Nile virus in Utah this year, no fatalities. They had over 200 with 17 deaths. And so there's a price to pay for restricting these activities, and they're paying it, and we're not. So that's all I have. Ken, do you have anything?
I sure wish I did, but I don't.
So. Okay. And we do not need a closed session. And so I'll have a motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn.
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.